Blog Talk Radio.
Beyond the Book Club. We're starting on page 35. Last time we convened, we left off at we dealt with the white supremacy and its various stages, and we're still in the introductory section of the book by Neely Fuller, United Independent Compensatory Code System Concept, which is a textbook, workbook for thought, speech, and or action for victims of racism, white supremacy. And my name is Charles, Brother Charles, and my wife, Jolivette's on the wheel of steel. And we're on page 35. You have any special guests with us tonight, Jolivette?
Actually, no. Yes, you do. I'm sorry. I spoke too soon. Brother Ming is with us tonight.
All right. What it is. Okay.
Brother Ming, are you there?
I'm here. Can you hear me?
Oh, okay.
Yes, we can. All right, we can go ahead and get started with the text. He just says there are two basic methods of practicing racism. He said, well, number one is deceit, which is conducted subtly or by indirect violence, and number two, the second method is violence, is direct, and which includes threats, which today's political era we call terrorism. So he explains it by saying that deceit is the saying things are false and influencing non-white people to believe things that are not true. This is done in such a skillful manner that all non-white people, either directly or indirectly, submit to and or cooperate with the practice of racism. And he explains violence by saying using direct or indirect bodily harm or terrorism that is threatening to use direct or indirect bodily harm against non-white people who do not submit to and or cooperate with white supremacists in a satisfactory manner. And he said, white supremacy is always practiced with deceit, and or with direct violence, or with a greatly sophisticated combination of both. And we all have seen and heard and experienced this deceit and violence practiced against us, which whenever we come in contact with the racist people or members of the racist group, they usually go to number one, deceit, to try to help us understand that there is no racism that we are faced with. And then when that doesn't work, they threaten us with violence. I tell us to be quiet, and if we don't do that, then all these types of unfortunate things will they intend to make manifest against us for not acquiescing to this false reality that they hope to place us. Anybody have any ideas or things they want to say, comments on that?
No.
No, I don't.
Okay. All right. He says the six most important things to remember about the characteristics of racist man and racist woman. And the first one is, racist man or racist woman is generally any white person who speaks and or acts in such a manner as to produce or promote the practice of racism and white supremacy at all times, in all places, in one and or all areas of activity, including economics, education, entertainment, labor, law, politics, religion, sex, and or war. Number two, racist man and racist woman are collectively the smartest, most powerful, most malicious, most deceitful, most technical, most efficient, most inventive, and the most skillfully violent of all the people of the known universe. Number three, racist man and racist woman have as their ultimate objective the eternal promotion of their pride, ego, and arrogant incentive by practicing the eternal domination and abuse of people whom they classify as non-white. Number four. Racist man and racist woman always use deceit, direct violence, or the threat of direct violence to accomplish their ultimate objective of establishing, maintaining, expanding, and or refining the practice of racism. Number five, racist man and racist woman do not at any time willfully and deliberately do or say anything without the intention of establishing, maintaining, expanding, and or refining the practice of racism in all areas of activity, including economics, education, entertainment, labor, law, politics, religion, sex, and war. Number six, racist man and racist woman, by practicing racism, white supremacy, are the greatest promoters of falsehood, non-justice, and incorrectness among the people of the known universe. Does anybody have any comments on those six areas? Characteristics of the racist man and racist woman.
Well, I have a comment.
Okay.
I think we often hear people talk about, this is my friend who's not bad, but their friend is actually cooperating with the system too. That they're not objecting to it. So they often have a white friend who's not objecting to and cooperating with the system, not doing anything to change it, but they're a part of the system. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Well, yeah, they're number one on this list. Matter of fact, when I was reading this off, I thought of those particular kinds of people. Who they speak and act in a manner to promote racism and white supremacy, and people in our, who promote the non-white collective, members of the non-white collective, attempt to ignore those persons, those white persons, those persons classified as white, who speak and or act in ways that promote and produce racism and white supremacy. They pretend like it's not that bad, or that's just how it is and whatnot, and they actually, and those non-white people, members of the collective, non-white collective, actually become ambassadors to white supremacy. You know, they help make sure white supremacy takes place. They work, and it looks like, from what I'm seeing, they're ambassadors for white supremacy to us. I tell you, I had experience that I was in the post office trying to pick up some mail that I had on hold. White clerk didn't want to give it to me. You know, so I'm like, she said, oh, well, this mail, this is a different. I said, I'm picking up mail for the whole household. She didn't even ask me to write down, usually write down the name and address. And you say, you know, who you picking up for? And this one just said, okay, she got the address, went out, got the packages. None of the packages had my wife's name on it. You know, and so she's like, well, who is this? I say, it really doesn't matter. I said, I'm picking up mail for the household. And then black clerk right next to her say, I wouldn't give it to him unless his name on it. Mm-hmm. Now, I know that black clerk, she used to work at the downtown station. She's been working there for at least 20 years. Now, she know that you can collect mail for some person, collect mail for a group. And I say, I do this all the time. You're not going to give me that mail? I back away from the counter. She heard me reach out and gave it to me. You know? I'm like, I'm finna call you some problems. Don't give me this mail. She like almost threw it at me. Take it, oh, I just don't want no problem. I said, okay, yeah. And I just walked off. You know? And at that same...
I'm trying to imagine. Yeah, as you were speaking, I was trying to translate that. You know, so, oh no, don't give him no mail. I wouldn't give him none of that mail, Mr. Darling.
That's exactly what she was saying.
That boy ain't no good.
Yay. Right. I'm looking. I'm like, yeah, I got my beard and I got my hair and braids. I'm like, and you just, ooh, I should put a straightening comb to this hair. Walking outside all indecent with my hair all in its natural raggedy state. You know, I know what they're thinking. I've been studying this racism. You know, I got them all put together. Let me tell you something. I don't have to wait on this lady, oppressor to bring me my mail. Next booth over where the slave that was saying, oh, I wouldn't give to Mr. Charlie. She was waiting on a white customer. The customer had two first-class packages in small boxes. I would say they're like maybe 5x6x6. A black customer behind her say, oh, master, wouldn't that be cheap if you put that in a one priority box? I'm like, oh, now you're trying to save her money, too? Motherfucker, what, you don't even know this, motherfucker. Why the hell do you care? I'm thinking. But I know why she cares. I answer my own question. Racism, white supremacy. You a slave, and you don't want to make sure that old missy spend too much money. Now that just wouldn't be right. And Christian like of you. Nah. The white lady told her, it was so smooth. It was funny to me. She said, you know what, these are my grandchildren. I want them to get their own special box. Oh, that was funny. And then that slave cashier says, no, it is cheaper the way she's sending it because it's first class. And as though she had to say to the other slave, Don't you worry about this. I got this. I make sure Mouser wouldn't spend too much. As I'm on my job, you know. And they up there competing on who gonna be the best slave for Missy.
Mm-hmm.
They running the competition. I just shook my head. I'm like, you know what? I can't even really deal with y'all. I barely got my mail. I had to just back away from that concert because, you know what I'm saying? I was like, oh, you going to play this game? Let me tell you, I'm just going to get back from here because, you know, I'm really hot because, you know, for some other reasons, I had to even just come over here to this station. But anyway, my behavior, I had to modify, let, you know, show myself in a position of power to override all of their prejudices and the conditioning to get what I wanted. And that's what, you know, we got to learn how to do. Now, people really ain't trying to do that. Because Dr. Amos Wilson already told us we have to stop being what we are, and the racist won't be able to be who he is or what he is. That's it. That's the game right there. But we ain't trying to do that. We trying to think of everything else in the book. That ain't in the book, rather. But, and anybody else suggestions or anecdotes to what I just said?
Mm-mm.
All right.
That's it.
Yeah. All right. He goes on to discuss on page 36 the three basic characteristics of white racists by comparison with and in relationship to non-white people. Number one, powerful. Number two, smart and or sophisticated. Number three, malicious and or hostile. Explanation he has right here. The white supremacists are the most powerful of all the people in the known universe. They are willing and able to dominate all non-white people. In all places in the known universe and in all areas of activity, including economics, education, entertainment, labor, law, politics, religion, sex, and war, the white supremacists are smart. They're also very sophisticated. They are not naive or simple-minded. They have very great knowledge and understanding of many things. Their thoughts, speech, and actions are usually complex or greatly developed in form and technique. They are very misleading of others and very clever in doing so. The white supremacists are malicious. They are hostile. They are willfully and deliberately practicing great deceit and great violence against people classified as non-white. They do this for purposes of maintaining permanent domination and to glorify white supremacy as being the best of all possible forms of existence in any place at all times throughout the universe, both known and unknown. Any comments on that?
That's pretty much true. I've heard it argued that that they're not as they're not as smart, but they're smart enough to have us all doing exactly what needs to be done to keep to maintain themselves in their position that they're in.
I'm glad you keyed in on that, because that's exactly what I wanted to key in on. I'm reading Developmental Psychology of Black Child, Dr. Wilson, and he really takes this black community apart in a way that I think most black people really can't stand to bear. Because when you say smart, number two, right here on this three characteristics, I remember my upbringing. My ancestors were saying, oh, they not as smart and stuff, and we smarter. And that's a great deceit right there. Because they'll tell you in one breath, they not as smart, and the next breath, they smarter than you. You can't do this, you can't do that, trust them. So which is it? Are we smarter than them, or, you know, in some things, are they smarter than us in others, or should we use this smart that we're supposed to have to outwit them, or should we under the face that we are not as smart and try to become clever enough to outwit them. See what I'm saying? None of this is, none of the, whether you, no matter how our intelligence, our intellect is evaluated or understood by our people, it is never considered in terms of using whatever intelligence we have or improvement thereof for the main, for the acquisition of liberation. So whether I'm smarter than white people or not is immaterial. The point is they are oppressing me, and whatever smarts I got need to be applied to that objective, to that end. You see what I'm saying? And we sit around in our community, I'm speaking about some black bourgeoisie, middle class, whatever, from which, you know, lower middle class from which, you know, I was a part of. They just want to sit around and reach around and they back and touch and pat themselves on the back about how good they, how much the achievement they have made using their smarts to accomplish whatever academic and career goals. But they don't feel smart enough to be number one or to try to be number one. So, you know, we know there's a lot of self-deceit they put in us that we, you know, we not willing. Black people don't like to admit number two. They'll admit that hostility and that power, but you see how many black folks you can get to admit. In fact, we got to put a poll up on African Knowledge Beyond the Book Club. That's what we're going to do. And we're going to say, we're going to put a poll up with some suggestions and we'll work it out and see how many people answer that poll. And respond about how many people believe that white people are smarter and or more sophisticated than non-white people in the universe, and seeing people get to answer that in the affirmative.
You know, I know a good example. You know, in the last couple of days, I noticed that you take something like the death of Whitney Houston. This is one of our best and greatest singers that we all seem to be proud of, and on Facebook, there were a lot of people posting up a video of her singing the national anthem. Now imagine that.
Oh, really?
Now imagine that so many people who are RBG or what have you, you're posting up this picture, this video of how proud you are of her singing your enemy's national anthem.
And if
that's the case, anybody that can get you to do that must be smarter than you.
Yes. Yes. Right. I mean, yeah, man. They gotta be. These guys are a master. Man, we like hand puppets. I mean, that's why this show is so popular. Because we're really good at facing reality. We've become so adept. That's why I can't wait for going off on Mr. Charlie to debut. Next month. You think you hate us now. You ain't seen nothing. Because let me tell you something. I ought to post. What I'm going to post, you know what, since you just brought that up, I'm going to post Deborah Wilson from Mad TV making fun of Whitney Houston. And I want to see how many, what people got to say about that. They're going to be threatening to come to my house and cut me. Come on, man. Whitney Houston is a socially irresponsible, freebasing idiot, okay? Yes, that's right. I said it. She's done nothing to benefit the black community in general. I ain't talking about 3 or 4 people she gave $1,000 to so they can go buy out to be too big for their house. You see what I'm saying? I know she done something for somebody sometime. We're talking about the generalities here. What the hell has she done that was positive for the collective? The answer, I would say zero.
All right,
she's done more.
Pretty much similar to what everybody that we deal with as far as Black history. You know, we have a whole line of people who are talked about throughout Black History Month, who their achievements were so great have nothing to do with the progress of their own people. It's only the progress of the white collective.
Yeah. Now, she worked for Arista. Arista is a white supremacist organization whom she was a servant. All right. Mm. She worked for Arista. That's what she did. She sang some songs to make people feel happy, and they bought lots of songs.
Yeah.
And Arista Records, you can look at its Relief Bank, and it financed the distribution and the manufacturing and promotion of the songs that Whitney Houston sang. Lots of Negroes went and bought those songs and paid Arista. Arista, in turn, overcharged Whitney Houston for the distribution of her song, and Whitney was in process of paying that back, which she had fallen into debt with the label. And now with her alleged death, I said alleged, she's going to make a lot of money. So we don't really know. She was dealing with a lawsuit behind that failure, that tour. So Adele, right about now, she was, you know, Adele is really good. A fake death, you know, real or imagined, doesn't matter. She's worth more to the label and her estate dead than alive. You know, Negroes don't like to think about that. Game, motherfucker. Excuse me. Sorry. Our society is slow. Black folks are slow. Way behind them A-ball. I don't care how much money they got. Matter of fact, because we're going to do developmental psychology of black child, we do false case African consciousness. And Amos tells us that the more money we making from the data and stuff that he's collected. This was in 1978 when Dr. Wilson said this. He said that we are crazier the more money we make. So we think that we improve our social, even though we improve our ability to have better nutrition, better housing, all of this, but we get literally crazier, madder, just going through the process to get the wealth, which is by submitting and becoming non-challenging white supremacy. It makes us nuttier. That means we are least likely to be able to use that wealth to our own exclusive advantage.
You know, Charles, I just got in a conversation yesterday with someone, and what I noticed is that my grandmother was around in the 1890s. In the 1890s, she, with no education, she never even saw the inside of a school. With no education, she had more property than all of my family combined now of college educated people.
Right.
And she didn't even have an education. 1890, you're talking a few decades out of slavery. And 100 years later, her grandchildren haven't accomplished what she accomplished in 1890.
Right.
I think that's odd.
She had more wealth than they have today. With all of this education supposed to have, that's what I've been arguing. We got all this education. My granddaddy had a third grade education, and he had more money than we got now.
Mm-hmm.
He had more businesses, more successful businesses than we got now. Obviously, we are educating ourselves with some education is bad for us.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever this thing that we call education, it's something wrong with it.
Mm-hmm.
Something wrong with it. No. But whatever, man. They keep playing around.
Oh, yeah.
Now, this, the next session, I think it's going to be the longest and last. How much time do we have left?
You have about 15 minutes left. You're in overtime now.
Okay, great. Elder Neela Fuller says, so there are three basic characteristics of non-white people by comparison with and in relationship to white people. Number one, powerless and pitiful. Number two, he says, primitive and or ignorant. Number three, stupid and or silly. His explanation follows. Number one, non-white people by comparison with and in relationship to white supremacists are powerless and pitiful. Non-white people are pitiful because of their lack of power and or because of their lack of will and ability to think, speak, and act effectively against injustice. In a world socio-material system dominated by white supremacists, the words powerless and pitiful are terms that best describe all non-white people and persons, both individually and collectively, at all times, in all places, in the known universe, in all areas of activity. Some may or may not be primitive, some may or may not be stupid or silly, but all are powerless and pitiful. Of all the white people in the known universe, it is those who practice white supremacy who have the greatest will and the greatest ability to do whatever they choose to do in all areas of activity, including economics, education, labor, law, politics, religion, sex, and war. They have also demonstrated through the practice of white supremacy that they have great will and great ability to subjugate non-white people, basically through the skilled use of deceit and violence. They maintain this subjugation through a day-to-day code of thought, speech, and action, utilizing a variety of words and deeds in a manner that promote falsehood, non-justice, and incorrectness. Non-white people, however, because of a lack of will and ability in one or more areas of activity, are both powerless and pitiful in comparison to the white supremacists who are subjugating them. The term pitiful people best describes all non-white people. All right, number two in his explanation. Non-white people, by comparison with and in relationship to white supremacists, are most of the time in most areas of activity primitive. This means that they are relatively simple and elementary in thought, speech, and action. It means that they are comparatively not greatly developed in knowledge and understanding of most things in most areas of activity, including economics, education, entertainment, labor, law, politics, religion, sex, and war. They are not smart or sophisticated in their attempts to prevent being subjugated by white supremacists. They are usually easily fascinated, deceived, and victimized by any white person who believes in and knows how to practice racism. Primitive people are not necessarily savage or brutal. Many of them are very non-offending. Many of them are very, very meek. But those non-white people who best fit the description of primitive are people who do not know or understand very much as compared to a smarter or more sophisticated people, such as the white supremacists. They lack both the will and the ability to do most of the things they need that need to be done to produce justice and correctness. The white supremacists, by comparison, only lack the will. They have the ability but refuse to use it. In this respect, the white supremacists are not as primitive as their subjects, but they are the most savage. Number three, in his explanation of the three characteristics of non-white people. Non-white people, by comparison with and in relationship to white supremacists, right, are most of the time in most area of activity stupid or silly. Most of the time do not think, speak, or act seriously and effectively in a manner that helps to promote the elimination of racism and the establishment of justice and correctness. Since it is they who are the victims of injustice, and incorrectness that is greatly promoted through racism, the non-white people of the known universe can be correctly judged as stupid or silly when compared to the racist. The racists are powerful, smart, and malicious. They are unjust. They are not stupid and are not silly. They know what needs to be done, and they are smart enough and powerful enough to do it. They know that justice should be produced, but they refuse to produce it. Their victims, the non-white people, when willing, simply do not know how to produce it. It is, however, correct for them to always try. It is their duty to always try. Considering the circumstances, the establishment of justice may be the assigned mission of the non-white people of the known universe. And that will be our final section for tonight. Are there any comments that anyone would like to make on this particular area, the three basic characteristics of non-white people?
Nope.
I would say that I was sitting there listening to you talk, and it reminded me of being in the military, and we're always the aggressor when in a military situation. We're always using some type of manipulation, and it's usually something made up to create a situation where we're going into somewhere in our best interest. And what you'll find very often is the enemy will be fighting us back. A lot of people don't realize it, but usually you have stuff like Geneva Convention rules, and the enemy will be are being attacked and misused by Western countries. And what do? They go by the rules of the Geneva Convention. And it amazes me. I was thinking about that as you were just speaking. It was, we don't think about justice. We think about rules written by somebody else who is doing something illegal.
Enemy.
Yeah.
Following the enemy's rule book. Mm-hmm. What the hell is this? Right, we're not smart enough to act in a way to produce justice.
Don't you see that often? These guys who are, every once in a while there'll be a soldier who will be caught by the Taliban or something, and then they get released, and then they go, "How did they treat you?" They said, "They treated me great. Didn't have any problems. They did such and such and such. I sat there and I ate with them, and I did this." And the other way around, they take these guys and torture them and rape them.
Right.
And it's amazing to me that these folks are following the rules and we're not. And I don't want to use that word we, but on this side, the rules are not being followed. And it's because you're going by the rules of your own enemy. And we do that in everyday life here,
Right. Sure do. One thing I thought about was whenever I see pictures of videos of some white racists going to Africa, and one thing in particular, like the scientists that were investigating the doggone Niger River Valley people and their knowledge of the mysteries of the Sirius A and B, the blacks, the dark star, and It's like they come in and they're offering gifts, and these are the same people that's been raping and pillaging your land for millennia. And I mean, there's nothing that these guys could say to help me to understand. I mean, I would give them all kind of false knowledge, perhaps, and false information or whatever, but they are not to be trusted, you know. And that just come to my attention here recently, how they're now trying to they're giving their daughters, their white European daughters, to some of these Maasai people in Africa for in marriage, and they're doing this in great numbers, giving them cell phones, and they got pictures of them posing with the European technology, you know. It's just mad, man. I mean, they're like, they're still able to fascinate us.
Yeah.
After all of this, you know, stuff is going on that they're doing. And it's working. Because, like mm-hmm. I said, collectively, we're stupid. And we've been saying it. And I'm glad Mr. Philip Fuller said it. And so everybody can just, and not to say just because Fuller and I said it is correct, we want to be proven wrong. All right. Any other thoughts we can, anybody else have any suggestions or any comments, and we can go ahead and close out this meeting.
That's it.
All right. Well, we'll meet again, convene again next Wednesday at 10 p.m. Central Standard Time to discuss Neely Fuller's United Independent Compensatory Code System Concept, a textbook workbook for thought, speech, and or action for victims of racism and white supremacy. All right, we'll see you next week. Peace.
Peace.